This podcast is brought to you by iGel. iGel offers the next generation edge operating system designed for simple, secure, and high performance access to virtual desktops and cloud workspaces. Easy to implement and straightforward to operate.
At the third stroke, it will be.
Hello, beautiful people, and welcome to the EUC Digest, your bi-weekly audio snack on everything EUC related. In today's show, we'll be talking to an industry veteran, one of the founders and active contributors of the EUC community, about EUC through the years. But before we dive into the history of EUC and how that's evolved into today's reality, allow us to introduce ourselves. My name is Ingmar Verheij. I'm your host for this episode, and with me is Erik van Klaveren. Hi, Erik. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, actually. Thank you for asking. Bit sweaty still. Just came off the squashing. I don't know what's it called, actually.
It's squash court, usually, right?
Squash court. Okay. No, just came from there. So I'm a bit smelly. So I think we're all glad this is recorded remotely.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that you've been able to go outside. So, I mean, same here. Great that I'm, you know, like many of our listeners, I'm usually working remote, especially the past weeks, months, I've been working remote, but I'm happy that, you know, we're slowly opening up here in our country. I hope the rest of the world will see the same, you know, good health. But Erik, we've got a guest. What did you find out about our guest?
I scoured the old ARPANET. No, kidding. But next of being an EUC veteran, he is really good bare feet musician with a professional music studio.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we got a musician among us. Wow. And the moment he announced to do a live performance instead of a keynote at the EUC Masters Retreat, it was sold out in the blink of an eye.
So he truly is a rock star. Uh-huh. I want to know more about this.
It has to be, right? Wow. Yeah. And did you know his martial arts skills come in handy whenever he has to trim the yard?
Wow. I'm
going to invite him. But you also found an interesting fact.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't know already who it is, but did you know that to monitor his infrastructure, he uses a Maneki Neko or a beckoning cat with red glowing eyes, and it shoots laser beams when things really turn ugly in its infrastructure?
Wait, what?
Yeah.
A cat, red glowing eyes?
Yeah, laser beams, smoke, everything. So that's wow. Next level. So, well, yeah. If you still don't know who our guest is, can you please introduce yourself?
Wow, guys, that is amazing. Like, I've never had somebody actually, like, know that much about me. This is Steve Greenberg. I'm in Scottsdale, Arizona, USA. I feel like I'm on a game show from the old days, like guess who's my line, or you have to guess who the guest is.
guess who, yeah. I mean, and let's assume everyone already knew like my line one. But hey, Steve, so thank you for being on the show today. Could you please explain to the listeners like who you are, what you do, and like how do people recognize you? How do they know Steve Greenberg? If they know Steve Green.
Yeah, this is kind of a crazy question, right?
Yeah, that's pretty awesome, actually.
But go ahead.
Getting ready on to the deep existential roots of our existence. I like this. You know, I would say in many ways, really what I am is just what we call a geek or a nerd. I'm enthusiastic about stuff, you know. And years ago, one of those areas was EUC, and I just ran with it and loved it. And it was early on, and it was exciting. But, you know, I am a musician as well, as you said. I love to tinker and build things and do things. And if anybody doesn't know what the reference to the cat with lasers is, at 2015,
no.
we took the OctaBlue framework, which is, you know, an IoT framework. And with Jason Conger and some other guys, we made it monitor a data center and just do some crazy things. If you look at GeekSpeak Synergy 2015, there's a live GeekSpeak Tonight, GeekSpeak Live. There's a whole video.
There's actually the same link in our show notes. So,
oh, you've got it. Okay.
Yeah, that's sure.
So I just like to do interesting things. That's really who I am. And when I see a need, I kind of go for it. So you also mentioned the Masters Retreat. And the community, which I'd like to talk about today, the history of the EUC community and where it's going, is just a wonderful group of people from around the world. And we had, for years, we had Bri Forum and Geek Speak and other opportunities, and they kind of changed and evolved and moved away and went away. So I started the Master's Retreat. So I think the thing that, you know, how you might know me is I just get deeply involved in things. I like to nerd out, geek out, and really make something out of them. So, you know, technology, particularly EUC, I'm a musician, and also working with others on community.
You're truly, I mean, you're pushing the boundaries on a lot of stuff in a good way. So if there's like an opportunity to explore this boundary and maybe even change the boundary of whatever is, you know, whatever's possible with technology, you're there. You're at the frontier of this change.
Well, thank you.
At least that's how I see you.
Yeah, the pandemic is having a big effect on that, which maybe we can get into a little later.
Absolutely, yeah, sure. I'm sure we'll cover that one. I mean, it's hard to miss an evolution of EUC. So, could you take us back to how did you end up in IT, and you know, what was the landscape back then? And you don't have to reveal your age, but I mean, can you explain?
No, I actually don't. That's really funny. I don't care. Now I'm 56, and I actually was working in music and audio production. It was a very technical job, although I'm a musician, a guitarist, and a composer. A lot of the work I was doing was really what, you know, in that field they call engineering, audio recording and mixing and MIDI programming and things like that. And it's really an interesting story. But the bottom line is I came from that world, which was used to, you know, producing media and live events and things of that nature. And you have a certain orientation. I got an opportunity. I had a young child. The travel wasn't really working for me. I didn't like it. To just shift over and take a job in IT. And I did. And it was the strangest thing is that all my skills translated. IT seemed like second nature to me. And I liked what you said about what was the environment like then. You know, I was working in Novell and DOS and early Windows. This is like, you know,
Daddy's operating system.
Yeah, exactly. The earliest operating systems. The first Citrix servers I did were based on OS2. So this is kind of early, mid-90s. The internet was just evolving, and I had access to high-speed internet really early because we were in an office complex that shared a secret military program with the University of New Mexico and the world's largest supercomputer, which they pretended was for, you know, civilian research, but I think it was really a defense project. And we had like these brilliant people in the building and high-speed internet that I talked them into giving to me. It's like firewalls.
You were privileged.
Yeah, they weren't a concept back then. Like the internet was literally just open. So they're like, yeah, okay, you know, stop bugging me and I'll give you a link. So it was kind of early, mid-90s. I'll go ahead.
Yeah, no, you can go. I didn't want to interrupt, but you already mentioned the early Citrix on a OS2 platform. Mm-hmm. So was this kind of the thing that shaped you to end-user computing, or
absolutely.
Was there another path?
No, absolutely. I loved IT. I found I really like could resonate right away. But we had this issue early on, which is still kind of a common use case, of different platforms that didn't talk to each other. The accounting system was, you know, really tied to DOS and Novell. And believe it or not, the Office had Next computers, which is the precursor of today's Mac OS X. And that's
awesome.
That's why I say that things are so different.
Eric is geeking out here. Yeah.
So
I was a Next Step administrator, and the platform was unbelievable because it's what you think of today as a modern desktop. In the mid-90s, it had all the features, but it didn't run.
You were ahead of the curve.
Yeah. I got exposed to a lot of great things early. And so I found I actually tried every product in the market, every form of virtualization, which is a whole other interesting story, but found this tiny little company that everybody thought was Citrus, like the fruit, but it was Citrix.
Which it was, to be fair.
Yeah, at first, it was.
At first. And then I was able to take the main accounting application that ran as a DOS executable, put it on Citrix, and deliver it over to these Next machines. And that was like a revelation. And ever since then, I've always just felt like it was magic. You know, I used to call it the magic of ICA, or now HDX, is that I can just deliver anything anywhere. And
I just wanted to say that's like magic, right? I mean, I remember the first day.
It isn't fair. You're with two Citrix in this room. So
No. I mean, the first time I saw this technology, I think it was like 97 or something, 98. It was like magic. What did just happen here? How is it even possible? By the way, I didn't see OS2 or Next, but what I did see is like people who have thin clients or, you know, small physical devices, and they were running like AutoCAD or something, which was 97. To me, that was magic. So you talked about virtualization already. This is presentation virtualization, right? So this is a different virtualization than what let's say the majority of the audience would relate to virtualization.
Yeah, but I was saying even in the mid-90s, the other forms of virtualization were out there, so I tested them all. There was machine virtualization. There was actually instruction set computing. You could buy a product that would run x86 on these Next machines, right? Because it would do instruction set conversion.
Yep.
You could do quarter deck. You could remote. There were actually products out. And I tried them all, but Citrix was by far the best because of everything we love about it, the multi-user, you know, multiple people on one box, separate sessions. So that's why the theme, when we talked about planning this, I said the theme was the more things change, the more they stay the same. Because I can describe mind-blowing changes, but I can also tell the story as actually we're doing exactly the same thing.
No, it sure is. And I can relate. I was kind of pushed into end-user computing because I started off as a network engineer. Programming routers and switches and that kind of stuff. But I also did some Citrix, and it was back in, I think, 2005. So I'm really a late bloomer.
What version kind of 2005? Was that a Metaframe? Or was it?
Yeah, it was Metaframe and the Access Suite and that kind of stuff. So I've kind of got pushed in there, but back since then, like you said, I'm kind of propagating the same story over and over again, because it still resonates and it's still actually the thing where we are at today.
Yeah,
it's the same, but it's totally different, and that'll be an interesting thing to explore.
Yeah, all the other way around. It's totally different, but it's still, like you said, it's still the same, right? So, and what I like from day one is like it's magic, right? I mean, there's something happening in the middle, whether it's a protocol or something else. But virtualization is just an abstraction layer. It's nothing more. It's just abstracting two different technologies into one. And we call it EUC. I mean, to me, the term EUC is relatively new. Back then, when I got started, it was SBC, so server-based computing. How can we, so for the audience that isn't really familiar with, you know, SBC or EUC, like all the abbreviations.
SBC was somewhere, before that, we had this thing called ASP, Application Service Providing.
Ah, good one.
Yeah.
No, oh, yeah.
It was after.
Yeah, that's exactly the point, though, that it keeps having a different name and a different shade and some new features, but it's really the same thing. So it also had two names. It was thin client / server based computing. SBC, thin client. And that's why my company's called Thin Client Computing, because it was a play on words that we're taking this technology, but we also have a company that does computing.
So I have 10 questions down my head. Just ask you because you are
go ahead.
Because you're the EUC veteran, I mean instead of me explaining stuff and doing it wrong. I better ask you, like, can you take us like through these terms, like SBC, EUC, VDI, ASP,
Yeah, absolutely. I'll start with the latest because it's taken me a while to warm up to end user computing and EUC. To be honest with you, because when it first came up, I thought it was almost an insult or diminishing what we do. Like, oh, you're just the end user portion, right? Meanwhile, you know, I spend most of my time designing storage and networks and data centers and DR and, you know, connectivity. And it felt like it was like, you know, I don't know, kind of a put down or not really showing what we do. But I've come around to it because really all of that is always in the service of the end user, right? That's what matters is can you complete the business case or the organizational mission, and you make users productive. And that's one of the references I was making earlier about the pandemic, was our job is really important now. It used to just seem like we're backroom nerdy guys, but we're affecting people's lives in really, really important
ways. You're an enabler, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it affects their livelihood, their family, everything. But to get back to your question, it's really just different ways of trying to say you can run things, you know, in a data center, near the data, in a secure environment, in a controlled environment, and allow anyone to operate it from anywhere. And everything's just a different name. So I think the first one I really think was the earliest would have been both thin client and server-based computing. And for a while, you saw it with a slash, thin client slash server-based computing, like, you know, like trying to like cover all the bases and use the full term. And then it kind of maybe was called server-based computing for a while. And I love you pulling out ASP, because that was the first attempt at the cloud, you know, was commercially hosting.
Yes.
Server-based computing was the application service provider. And it was cool. It was just a little too early because you didn't have the benefit of economy of scale. It was kind of expensive to buy all that enterprise equipment and try to host it for people.
I don't think the customers were ready, actually. I mean, sorry for interrupting you here, but I think for one, it's like, you know, having the right products and the right technology at the right cost. I don't think customers were like at the same a maturity level is maybe unfair to say, because, you know, in retrospect, I don't think they were matured enough in their organization to cope with such a service. Because, I mean, essentially, it's like today we have, you know, a DAS or some other way of getting involving a service provider to consume a service, right? We instead of buying a product, we just get a service and we expect the service provider to deliver whatever we agreed on. And whenever you say ASP, my eyes light up, because when I left my initial company where I worked, where I saw Citrix and it was magic, I moved to another organization that basically was our distributor. They did support for Citrix. They were truly support for Citrix, and they were like the Citrix powerhouse. I got to work for a company that did ASP. I was like, wow, this is amazing. This next level. And I think it was like 3 months that I was in the company. They said like, yeah, no one's buying it. There's no funding. So we're quit. That's 15 years ago or something. So I find it really fascinating to think back on ASP and like what it could have been if everyone's ready on what we do today.
Yeah, it's kind of my reference point, because I'm pretty much saying the same thing for 15 years. We only give it a different shell. It's not the device or anything else that is required in nowadays we call end user computing. It's the access point to the information you need for doing your job or what needs to be done. So it's actually the application.
Exactly. And the data.
The application is actually the hub to the information you need most oftenly. So if you can bring the application to the device with the hub to the information you require, you pretty much own the world.
See, I think that's...
You have everything.
Yeah, I think you hit on the core principle of all of it. And that's what hasn't changed. That's the part that's the same. Right, but products, technologies, features, where use cases you can apply that kind of evolve and change. So a really good example is a typical early scenario was modems. Like in the early days, I did like tons of modems and serial connections. You know, you were running at 96, 14.4, 56K, that kind of stuff. And it might be like your office had, you know, two locations or more, and one was the headquarters. Well, like in 93 or 95 or even later, like how would you possibly make a client server app work, right? The app has to download rows of data, operate on it, and push it back up to a Novell server. You know, it wasn't practical. And if you could pay for the data connection, it would be slow. So it's exactly what you're saying. It was a way of running the application, you know, at the headquarters where the data is on its native network. but presenting it out. The bottom line is that the user can get to it. It doesn't matter what kind of app it is, but now they can access it. The big difference was it might have been modems or early internet or, you know, ISDN or these weird old, you know, T1 and type of tech connections. And now the internet's ubiquitous, so we can do all kinds of different connectivity. But we're still trying to do the same thing, which is operate on the data close to its source, make it convenient to access from wherever you are, and get devices that are kind of, you know, low touch, you know, either they're low cost thin clients or it's just your laptop, and without any real investment in time or energy, you can access everything. And then the other thing that hasn't changed, which I think is fantastic, it doesn't get talked about enough, is the data never leaves the secure location. When you used EUC or server-based computing or whatever model we call it, the data is always in place in its native, you know, state.
Yeah, it's kind of a unique selling point, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think you're touching on a fair point, and I'd say I'm going to disagree somewhat on what you just said. That I think that for a lot of applications, the initial biggest problem, and I can totally relate that, having a client-server app back in the days running over modems. I remember ICA protocols. We said like you only need 20K like for per user. So that's, you know, that's you'd only need so much bandwidth. But I think that for a lot of applications, the challenge of you know, client server having this keeping it close that you can now disconnect it pretty far. Where let's say fairly large distance you can work with a client server app, because one, I mean, the applications are built differently. They are built with in mind that people are not always like next to the mainframe. And obviously, you know, the connectivity issue is somewhat resolved. I mean, not in every country, but the majority of the countries, there's so much bandwidth available, even in the air, you know, with 4G and dare I say 5G. However, I think that secure is basically becoming the next big selling point of the concept of EUC, because keeping your data in a data center in a secure, safe environment, that's a big pro. I mean, back then there wasn't an issue. You didn't have that much hackers that could actually break into and, you know, dialing into your modem or your ISDN. That was quite hard. With the internet, that's becoming a bigger threat. And now it's solving that issue. And I think that's one of the shifts that you meant, like, hey, things are changing, but still, you know, things remain the same.
Yeah, that's a great point. And what's funny about that is you're bringing out some of the things that have changed as well. So one thing that's changed that we don't appreciate enough is, because you mentioned like, oh, you just need 20K. Well, you really did just need 20K back then. Because when I started with, they were character apps, you know, DOS, OS2 character apps. But we don't appreciate the fact of how much data is in modern graphics. Just the screen resolution of the laptop I'm sitting at, you know. I don't remember what it is offhand, but it's an Apple 2500 by something. That's a crap ton of data just to display what you're looking at. And that's one of the challenges with EUC today, is the graphics have accelerated really exponentially. Like, we couldn't even imagine it. If you think about your old CRT screen or even your early LCD panel, you know, we were lucky. We were happy to have like a 17-inch 1024, right, at some point. Well, if you took that same screen and just took those number of pixels and put them on your modern monitor, they're like a little icon. It's like
that's
a little
probably, pill, yeah,
right? And that's how much data we're dealing with.
Yeah. This was kind of the part where Yitz actually fell in with his NVIDIA part.
By the way, for the listener, Yitz was, you know, we wanted to have him on the podcast as well as a host or a co-host, but Yitz turned sick and he has no voice. Which is really hard on a podcast.
So we wish him well and a speedy recovery. Hopefully his voice comes back.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, our requirements keep changing. But what doesn't change, I think, and that's also in regards to what you just said, that the compatibility or the lack of compatibility on a lot of aspects, That's what keep changing, or keep basically remains the same but are changing. So you talked about your OS2 application that you need to deliver on the next device. I mean, you know, different operating systems, maybe even different instruction sets on a processor. There was a compatibility challenge there. I'm running a Mac, but I can still run my Windows apps because of presentation virtualization. And I think what you just said on hardware is the same, right? Maybe my hardware, I've got a thin, like a Raspberry Pi next to me, it's not capable of running like this extremely graphical application, but it can present it. We're solving compatibility issues like constantly. Like I think that's the recurring theme of EUC. Would you agree on that, Steve? Or do you see it differently?
I love what your insights are great, guys. This is really exciting. Yeah, that's the thing. Another way to say it is we just always solve the problems that come up. That's what keeps happening. You know, printing profiles, platform compatibility, endpoints ability to render and process. EUC just keeps knocking them down and solving them one after another. That's why I love it.
Yeah, but is it really a problem? Isn't it really a requirement or need we get from the consumerization of more IT? Because I think if you go back to a store like 20 years ago and went to buy a PC or a laptop, hey, you were definitely a nerd or a geek. But now you can run into any store globally, more like a Walmart, or go to Amazon or a media market, what's more around the Dutch market. You could buy a laptop and pretty much it's there. So a lot more of those IT products are adopted in a more home scenario and by the average consumer.
The average consumer walks into Best Buy and literally buys a supercomputer. You guys are not going to believe what I'm about to tell you, but my first Citrix servers were compact beige machines with a 486 and 16 megabytes of RAM. And they ran about 8 or 10 users, you know, doing like that app I was talking about. Megabytes. So when you go and buy anything at Best Buy, anything they sell, it's a supercomputer.
Yeah, but that's they have the technology at hand. And especially there's a lot of talking about millennials and digital natives. They have technology at hand. So it's much more adopted and it's much more expected nowadays in corporate and enterprise environments. So that's where we don't try to solve. It's kind of a problem, but it's actually a need from a generation, to my opinion, because, for instance, there's a large music streaming company in the Nordics. It's pretty big, and they can't hire people if they don't want to adopt the shine and bling that Apple brings to them. So they have to give them their MacBook Pro, their iPhones, where we're at this moment, the 11.
11-ish, yeah.
Yeah, 11-ish. Yep. And you have to give those AirPods. Otherwise, they can't get those developers in because their competition is doing pretty much the same. And it's kind of the way is that we expect the technology we have at hand at home, we kind of expect that in enterprises and corporate as well. So in some way, yeah, we're trying to solve the problem to adopt those platforms and those devices into what our end users sounds so ugly, but bring into our company and into our network, and we're trying to solve that and make that a fit and make all those traditional or legacy applications we used to run fitted on those new platforms.
Yeah, this is a great point. And this is where it has changed, right? We say it's so different, but it's the same. What has changed is this whole genre you're talking about, you know, true internet apps, high graphics resolution, Apple, web programming, all of these new open languages. And that's where EUC needs to evolve. And I think it is. But if we think of EUC only as the old school guys, it's going to become, you know, the legacy. Oh, all your Windows apps end up in Citrix, and that becomes what EUC is legacy, like mainframes are today. But right. That's where I think the concept of workspace in the industry is new. Now, you could say, no, well, it happened as portals and intranets and other things in the past. That's true. But the difference is what you're saying is it allows people to work on any device. And it allows apps to be of any nature. They don't have to be hosted anymore. They don't have to be Windows. They can be JSON interfaces, REST interfaces. They can be, intelligent workspace type thing, grabbing data from an enterprise app. That's really where it's going. And that is new and different. And I think EUC mm-hmm. has a huge role there if we take it.
Oh, yeah. I think if I think about it and we contemplate on the future, I'd say that would it be fair to say that EUC is and always has been an enabler of change, and if I think about where we are today, right, I'm not referring to COVID, but I think we're in the middle of a revolution where large enterprises having a diverse workforce is actually a competitive differentiator, and not just of getting a badge, we hired more women, we hired more, I don't know, whatever diversity that we want, but more really getting a more diverse workforce that's more creative, productive, and balanced, and therefore a reflection of society. I think that because you can now hire people who are not just physically close to the organization, which has been the standard for many a long, long time. And I think even Facebook said we're stopped hiring in I don't know where they are, somewhere in California. We're starting to hire people globally, or at least across the different states. Would it be fair to say that EUC is the enabler of a diverse workforce? Or am I now getting it out of maybe I'm now overthinking this, but.
No, I think that's a huge thing. In fact, I'll say to you, and maybe because, I have been around a long time and I'm old, I get to do an I told you so old cranky guy thing. But we've been doing that for 20 years. We have been out working with customers, and I have PowerPoints from 15, 20 years ago saying exactly what you just said with what is now EUC. You can, expand your workforce. We have enterprise projects that were based on that premise. In fact, the Cox Communication project called Cox Connect, it won the Citrix Innovation Award in 2007. Okay. That was the premise of it. They were growing fast. They were running out of brick and mortar. And we did an analysis with them. If you just virtualize this, you can expand your reach of people and improve your business. And they jumped on it, and that long ago, they created all the HR, hiring, training, management processes around this. We had a whole series of things like site surveys, go to the person's home, do they have a proper desk, ergonomics, lighting, quiet. I mean, this is not new, but it seems new, and people are aware of it now. And that's why I said earlier about the COVID is going to impact hugely. I think it's made that truly mainstream. We're seeing numbers 55% of the people who went to work at home for COVID aren't coming back. At that level.
That's massive. I mean, it's a massive enabler, and I think that's not a lot of people understood the impact it can make. Like you said, this is nothing new, right?
We are all in a huge pilot now.
Yeah, exactly. I have to stop and tell you a great story. One of my favorite people. And I'll say his name. It's okay. It's Dustin Fennell, the greatest CIO I've known with. He's worked at four or five places, and I've done projects with him at, I think, most of those. And he gets great results, so it's not irresponsible, but he says POCs are for pussies.
Yeah, well, I met him a few times, and I think it's
and I think you're right. The COVID is a giant EUCP, a worldwide POC. I love that.
Absolutely, but I mean, I think also it's such a big an enabler. Not just for, it's great for our industry that we get more work, we can sell more licenses. It's array. Our business is going to be great for the next coming years. But I think the impact on society. I just keep thinking on not just being able to work from home, that's great. I mean, I always did, but just being able to hire more people who, you know, didn't feel comfortable traveling, or, you know, didn't feel comfortable relocating, or even just, you know, having more, what's it called, like short time work, like people work for 4 hours a day, or maybe someone in the evening. And even, and I'm not really, you know, stretching it, but who cares what you look like? Who cares what gender you are? Who cares what religion you are? You're just, I mean, not just, that's, now I'm not making it, but you're just a worker, right? You are an extremely valuable asset for an organization. You're the employee, and that's the most, one of the most valuable assets. And we can enable that diverse workforce.
Yeah, that is one of the most exciting things I've heard in my career, to be honest with you. That's just incredible that we can have that impact on people and organizations. I love it. It's a big, yeah, big deal.
And that's what we did, right? I mean, and not just we. I mean, I think it's, and we'll touch on the community afterwards, first, because I think that's a massive, one of the biggest impacts we have with this, especially with COVID. That's the moment where everyone's like, "Hey, I cannot work from home. Isn't this great that with this small piece of technology, and just a small piece of the puzzle, right? We were able to keep businesses running. We were able to keep people healthy and safe with just simple technology, which exists for 20 years. I think that's massive.
It is massive. Yeah. So I want to tell
we
you
save lives.
Yeah, I want to tell you a quick anecdote. Is what we're finishing up now. We're in the late stages of it. Pretty major project where a company had bought another company in its industry, had merged, and the second one they bought was a customer, you know, doing EUC, and then the combined entity bought another company, which was a combination of other companies, and had to integrate them. And the idea that they wanted us to do was the last company that was purchased had a very poor old school flat network, very insecure, was to bring that into the enterprise environment and, you know, wall it off and use VDI to transition all the users to running their apps in like a secure enclave.
It's kind of, was it Token Ring?
It wasn't that bad.
No. Was it the bus network?
Yeah. Well, flat meaning like they had no segments, everything was wide open, you know, users could ping servers, terrible, you know, 2003 operating system, stuff like that. But the point is, COVID hit in the middle of this. So in the middle of this interesting project, we had to leverage the VDI that we had intended as like a security measure, as a merger acquisition tool to enable people at home. And it was happening so fast, and there was so much confusion because this wasn't one company. It was like the equivalent of three or four companies, right, trying to merge. That we ended up offering to work with the end users to train them. You know, so I, in my production studio, I created training videos with my team, and we got on calls with people and helped get them online and train them and answer questions. We did like 12 Q&A sessions. But the story I'm getting to was a few times people would join and just leave their camera on. And it was just so impactful. Because many people, like one young lady that really just sticks in my mind, got on the meeting to learn how to, you know, work from home and get set up. And she was sitting like literally 6 inches from her bed in a tiny little room, you know, squished up against the wall to get on this meeting. And that just spoke volumes to me. You know, these are people, right? These are people that can't go to their office, that have families, that maybe live in a small apartment, right? And we're doing them a great service. They can keep their job going. They can feed their family. We can help them how to set up, how to work at home, some tips, you know, things like that. So it's a big deal. It impacts lives. It prevents that business from going out of business, right?
So it's fair to say that you now feel very comfortable with the term EUC, end user computing.
Yeah.
Yeah, to me, there's a big thing above this, because only people who work in IT and drug dealers are calling their consumers users. And this is something I think I already brought out on to you, Ingmar, on a previous podcast that was in Dutch. And this is the major problem I'm having with the term user, because only when you consume IT or are a drug addict, you are called a user.
Well, yeah. I mean, I know what I think that's a good segue, because I wanted to switch gears to something else.
Good,
so,
good.
This sounds funny, getting from, you know, calling users related to drugs. But, you know, some would say that the community is, it's like a group of friends, you know, even an extended family.
How is this drug related?
Oh, wait. So, because my group of friends are so excited about this, I have to do this too. Or the other way around. Maybe I got, you know, other people addicted to this stuff, because it's just immensely cool.
I see where you're going.
There's my segue. But I mean, community. We talked about problem solving, and I'm going back to the early days then. You know, when we were talking problem solving, and you said already, you know, Thin Client is the name of our company. I remember the Thin Client list, you know, Douglas Brown, DABC. I'm missing one letter here.
He brought that one up to me. It wasn't him who did this.
No, but I'm just saying the same era, right? So, you know, Steve, you already mentioned Bryform. So Brian, there were so many people that I never met because, you know, traveling was just, you know, we came later on. And the internet was still fairly early days. Like, what was the role of the community in building this space? I mean, I guess this EUC as a technology got built, but also basically group of friends, right? Or extended family. What's your perspective on the role of community and your impact on it? Because I mean, you're very well known in the EUC community and very well respected. So you're one of the few CDP fellows for a good reason.
Well, guys, I just love talking to you because you bring up really the core issues. The community in EUC is very remarkable. It's special. It's precious. It's deep. And this is how I think of it. Back in the day, you had, you know, Doug Brown, Brian Madden, Roy Takeshi, you didn't mention. He had a website early on, Takeshi.com. And it was Jim Kenzik with the Thin List. And it was sort of like we were these weirdos. Like, somehow there were these people that all sort of found, you know, like Citrix and VMware and all this technology, but didn't really know each other. We're in completely different countries and states in the U.S. And these early platforms, you know, started getting us connected, and we got to know each other just as an email address, you know, or this guy had a website. But then we started to meet each other more and more in person. And, you know, I'm very Citrix focused over the years. So things like Citrix's early, you know, before Synergy was iForum, and early reseller events like Thinergy. So I met, you know, Rick Dellinger and Roy Takeshi and people like that in those days in kind of a more formal setting. But those were still corporate events. The big change occurred when enough of us started showing up to the corporate events. And before the community you think of today, all of these events were tightly controlled, probably by the marketing department. So if you went to a software vendors conference, no one in the community spoke. It was all employees or selected customers. And an example, as recent as 2006, I'm not just talking the 90s, I had done the Mayo Clinic, which was really a breakthrough in virtualization at a large-scale hospital. And the instructions when they brought the customer to speak were they couldn't mention us, Thin Client Computing, or any consultant or anybody who did anything. They could only talk about their project and their company. It was like weird. It was like, why wouldn't you let the person who designed it talk, right? Yeah. And that created this idea. We had a critical mass where a bunch of us all knew each other. It was probably like 50 to 100 people, you know, just roughly, that might be at the event, that we just met organically. And it started at a very anarchistic, anti-establishment event in Houston when Synergy was there 1 year. It was Geek Speak. Laura Whalen and a bunch of other people were there and just had an open speech thing. And so, you know, Rick Dellinger, I, Sean Bass, got up and spoke. And what you had was all the executives showed up. What is this? And stood in the back. And this was when VDI was a twinkle. It was an idea, not even a product. And companies were trying to like say it, you know, it was great, right? It didn't really even really do anything yet. Sean Bass got up and called that out to this giant room. And you saw like cheers and applause and understanding. And then the back of the room was all the executives of the company with their arms crossed, pissed off, except one, Mark Templeton, who is smiling and nodding and saying, "This is great. We're hearing the truth. We can do better." Yeah. And that kicked off that whole idea of a geek speak, of a community that knew stuff, that would meet, that would, you know, correlate. And then there was the early CTP program and other programs like that. And it grew for years. Bri Forum, to me personally, was kind of the center of it because I could just forget all the vendor stuff and just go to Bri Forum and work on some presentations that were super challenging. And, you know, I would sit through Bri Forum. I would not miss a session. I'd go one to the next, to the next, give one, go to another one, give a session. It was... I just wanted to be a sponge, and everybody there just became a family.
Yeah. What's the major difference nowadays to E2E and Bri Forum?
Well, E2E is fantastic. So E2E still has it. It's just, for me, it's not in the U.S. You know, so I've gone in the U.S., but I haven't gone in Europe yet. And when things change, I'll try to do that. So E2E still has that. That's why I created the Master's Retreat, the EUC Master's Retreat. And just to explain, that name doesn't mean it's only for masters of the craft. It's for everyone to come interact, to be part of the community and learn from the people, you know, that have more experience. But I took it even further in that it's an unconference that doesn't even have an agenda. It's a self-organizing conference based on open space technology. Because what we found through these community gatherings was that you could create a session a few months ahead of time, but the world has changed. So by having the conference happen spontaneously, it was just, you know, 1,000 times better and deeper. And you kind of follow your interest and you follow
it sparks experts. More.
Yeah.
It sparks more conversations. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, we get really fast from starting a community into like where we are today. But I think community to me has always been like you share your knowledge, your information, without knowing who the other guy is, other girl, on the other side, right? Because especially the first day, you send an email to a list and people respond. That's awesome. And to me, personally, that's how I've seen a community always. And it's, I mean, it truly has been one of the major reasons to stick into this business and invest a lot of time and you know, invest my career in it, build my career on it, is because there are so many people that I either saw and respected, like, hey, I remember the first time I saw Helga Klein. It was like, dude, I know your name. You're the creator of this disorder. And it's like, and yeah, I'm just sitting, you know, drinking a beer with him in Dublin after a pub forum. And it was like, that's amazing. This is just a normal human being. That's quite awesome. Well, I thought he was like a god. But the thing is, what I like about those.
He is, by the way. Helga is a god.
That's me today. Oh yeah,
I was just saying. that's right, yeah,
half gone. But I mean, the same goes for Master's Retreat, and I've, you know, we've been talking about this a few times. So I should visit at one point. And this year was supposed to be the year that I was visiting Master's Retreat. But what I like about those conferences, what I like about community conferences, whether that's like a user group or like an E2E, people who take like the time, the effort, the nerves are set aside. I'm going to tell you my story. I'm going to tell you what my opinions are. Hopefully they are like founded well, and it's not just opinions. And everyone in the room is like, hey, you know, you're stepping up. Let's listen. And if I disagree, that's fine. Let's have a normal conversation. And I think that's what you already said with your in-conference. It's about the dialogue. It's about meeting people who might know more than you do, or at least listening to the other and respecting each other's opinions.
Exactly.
So to me, that's community, right? I mean, I'm filling a podcast here with my opinions, but I think that community has been has played such a massive role in you know, the start and the development of EUC as a whole. So how would you, what do you think of community today, Steve, and how it should evolve?
Well, it's like everything else, it ebbs and flows. So we had a really great growth and a real openness. I think a number of the key corporate vendors in the space have pulled back a bit in recent years. And that's okay. It's, you know, like I say, it ebbs and flows, it comes and goes. But now it's established. So now you don't need anybody to sponsor you or support you, right? You've got the ability to communicate on Slack. And I think that's more the nature of it now. It's happening in special interest groups. There's all kinds of interesting Slacks out there you can join, you know, forums, things like independent conferences, you know. I think it's more of that nature now. It's a little quieter is what I mean, not as visible, like maybe by the sponsors, but it's probably bigger and stronger than ever. But it's a little bit more specialized, I'd say, today.
Yeah, and I think that's I mean, obviously, I work for a vendor these days, and therefore I'm biased. But so I've seen things from different sides, and I definitely get why things are changing. And I think that's also mostly because products are matured, people are matured, or as in, you know, because we have so many blog websites, there are so many, you know, services like you mentioned, Slack or YouTube channels where you can learn and share, that maybe the community programs that we had are need to evolve as well. And I think, to me, Twitter is still the biggest, you know, platform to share knowledge.
Yeah, me too. It's funny you say that. I also think that you were asking about our unique EUC community, and our timing was perfect to come to be on Twitter when Twitter was new. So this community is really well represented on Twitter, and you don't have flaming. You don't have like all the negativity in this community you see in other places or in other social media in general. So I love EUC Twitter. I mean, that's, I spend time every day learning on Twitter from my colleagues.
And it's free. That's great, right? We all share in our own ways. Yeah.
Yep.
Cool. So final question. I think it's a very important question.
The most important question is,
after your
pineapple on your pizza.
Yes. Let's not ask that question. That's a flaming debate.
Let's not go there.
Talk about flaming on social media. Pineapple and pizza is one of the hottest, you know, flame points.
I know, because I so much disagree on this, but I know people love it. So let's do not go this bad.
Eric, I'm a foodie. I'd eat everything. So. Even pineapple, but let's not have this discussion right here. Steve, after your bare feet live performance as an opening act, what can the attendees expect at EUC Masters Retreat? What is there that, you know, everyone should join, or at least the people?
Well, you know, it is hard to explain the EUC Masters Retreat because I said it's based on open space technology. A gentleman named, I always get it backwards, if it's Harrison Owen or Owen Harrison. He was a professional event planner, you know, conference organizer, facilitator, and he would attend the conferences. And what he found was it was the time outside of sessions where people made the deepest connections and the greatest insights. So it was the break time that had the most value, where enthusiasts and experts would gather and kind of identify the biggest challenges and throw out solutions. So it's a method where basically the whole conference is break time. You're always in a facilitated environment. And the way you do that is you, well, first of all, we choose a beautiful place, especially this year, which is postponed or canceled because of COVID, where you can kind of sort of take over the facility. You know, there's outdoor spaces, indoor spaces. So the spaces and the place is very inviting. The meals are provided. But the important thing is, everybody who's there determines the topics, and people who have expertise or passion in an area volunteer to lead that area, that discussion. And it starts when it starts, it ends when it's over. And the concept is whoever is there is whoever needs to be there. And whatever happened is the best thing that could have.
It kind of sounds like Woodstock.
It does. I was just about to say, it sounds like woo-woo, love and peace. But it's, but it's not. What happens is, you know, if you're really concerned about app layering and virtualization, Rory Monahan is there, and he brings his latest matrix of everything he's tested, and you start talking about it, and 3 hours later you go, maybe we should eat now. Uh-huh. It's more like that, right?
So, I mean, you talked about the change in community and in community programs mostly. Like at EOC Masters Retreat, do you think people from vendors should be there to listen and maybe even participate in those conversations? Or is
Yes, absolutely. This is the thing about it is there is no difference between an attendee, a sponsor, a speaker, or an organizer. Everybody attends the same way. There are no booths. So we don't say, hey, you stand behind a table and try to convince me of anything. You just attend. So there are sponsors and there are vendors, and they attend the sessions and they pitch sessions. They can get up and say, I really would like to take you through why, you know, whatever product or technology or idea I have is good or better. Okay. Yeah. You know, let's see who wants to do that. And other people raise their hand and they go do it. So it is that way. There is no separation between anybody.
I like it a lot. I'm very in.
I think we have to pitch to go over there.
All right. Well, let's plan to do a live episode from the next EUC Masters Retreat.
I would love that.
Yeah.
Are you going to do a virtual event? I mean, as you said, you're not postponed or like maybe just next
year. Are people done with those virtual events?
We are going to do a virtual event, but I'm working with DJ Eshelman because mm-hmm. we want to make it not suck. And we're trying to find a platform that doesn't suck. You know, like Zoom is a great, but it sucks. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Not so. Yeah, we're trying to find a better way to do it. So we are going to do something virtual, but ultimately this is an in-person event because it's a retreat.
Okay, kind of a segue. Let's go to those communication platforms. Teams, meh. It isn't my favorite. Zoom, it make a big boom, but like you already mentioned, it isn't that great. Is there anything that would fit this picture? And Ingmar, don't mention the GTM.
No, I figured that maybe Steve would say something here on GoDo. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, it's none of those meetings, and here's why. Because none of those platforms, because they're designed really well for a specific purpose, which is serial communication. One person speaks and then another, particularly if one person is the presenter. They're not designed to support collaboration. You can't even talk over each other. How do you collaborate when you can't go, wait, let me ask a question, or well, I want to say something, and then you all go, who's talking? And whoever the person ends up talking is the one who doesn't pay attention and talks over everyone. Like, that's terrible.
Yeah, but the one thing I'm seeing, especially now, is those virtual coffee rooms who are extended. And we use the communication tools we already have in place. And with that, we try to mimic the coffee room, like we are drinking coffee, but and talk to each other. But I can distance myself and talk to a fellow colleague of mine and distance myself from the main conversation. And this is something that can be done.
That's what we need. So what platform do you do that in?
You tell me.
Oh, that I want to know. That's what I'm working on. No, exactly. That's exactly what I'm working on. So let me just say a couple things real quick. I've been holding a weekly EUC happy hour. Anybody listening to this should come.
I saw that.
And is welcome. I don't publicize it because I don't want to spam people, but it's open. Everyone's invited. It's a lot of fun. And I'm experimenting with exactly what you're asking, Eric, is how do we do this? Now, we're using Zoom, but I'm trying to do this for a few months, build up some community and some understanding of how to do it. But what I'm working with DJ on, he has a subscription to a conference platform that allows you to break out. And you hit the key of it, is you have to be able to say, I'd like to talk with this person or this group, or I want to change topics, which is what we do at the Masters Retreat. You can just change rooms. And that's what these platforms don't really have.
It feels like the old days of like chat rooms, right? And I think we should we need to wrap this up. And I mean, I know that you know Eric just said like Teams meh, but I think what I like about Teams and Slack is you have different channels. Like you have a main channel. This is where the conference is, and you can break
out. I like Slack. I hate Teams.
Yeah, me too. I like Slack too. But the concept of having channels breaking out into a different channel, and then you can start a new video or audio conversation. But I mean, to your point, Steve, this is virtual is not a great solution for these type of conferences or these type of conversation. So before we wrap it up, is there anything you want to add?
Just one attention. It's just our opinion that we hate Teams.
No, Eric, you're.
You agree to it.
Well, let's just say that your choice of collaboration platform is like a lot like pineapple and pizza.
Is there anything else besides pineapple that you want to add or you know, want to come back or like want to emphasize for this specific podcast?
Well, you guys have been an absolute pleasure to speak with. And I would just emphasize for anybody listening that as Ingmar really focused on today, the community is everything here. It's pretty special. And if you have an interest in this, you are part of the community. So I'm just going to extend a big open invitation to everyone listening to become part of events, Slack, happy hour, Twitter, whatever. Just reach out to us. Everybody is just on an equal footing and happy to share information and to move knowledge forward. So that's, I think, the main thing I want to emphasize.
Yeah, thanks. I definitely 100% agree. And with that, we're going to wrap up this episode. So thank you all for listening. We hope you enjoyed this snack as we try to serve you the right amount of EUC for your appetite. If you have anything you want to add here or just want to stay in touch, reach out to us on the social channels or by email, podcast@euc.digest. Cheers, people.
This podcast is brought to you by iGel. iGel offers the next generation edge operating system designed for simple, secure, and high performance access to virtual desktops and cloud workspaces. Easy to implement and straightforward to operate.